Welcome back to Footsteps in the Attic, the podcast dedicated to all things strange and paranormal. And this is episode number 49, which means we have exactly one more episode to go before we close out season two and we end it on an even 100 episodes. And I could not have done any of this without my wonderful, amazing listeners who, I tell you, I just am overwhelmed by the support. I love the questions that I receive. I love the ideas I receive for certain topics. And I just appreciate every single one of you. I really do. It means a lot to me that you would spend time out of your day to listen to my ramblings. But I have to tell you, it's been a blessing. The interviews I've been able to snag with some of my heroes, with people that I've admired, has been amazing. And I have some format changes coming up for season three, which I will make all of you aware of. We are going to do episode number 50. Next week, and then I will either explain the format change at the end of that show or when we launch season three. Anyway, I have some questions that I receive every now and again, and I like to use it as an opportunity to make a themed show out of. So it's more like an Ask Brian from a paranormal standpoint. Some of these are questions which I've been asked and answered before in previous episodes, but I don't want you to have to scroll back through and listen to, you know, 98 other episodes to get to those particular topic point. So I will re-answer some of the questions that I received, which you loyal listeners may or may not have already heard. Some of them are brand new, but a lot of them are Christmas-themed or at least winter-themed questions. So I thought I would compile all these questions and make this a special edition Christmas Q&A episode. So right off the bat, Kelsey asked me, what are my thoughts on Krampus and is Krampus real slash a demonic entity? Now, I have done the topic of Krampus before. I have given my thoughts on Krampus. And in a nutshell, no, I don't believe Krampus is a real demonic entity, although there are certainly demonic entities which match the description of Krampus without the Santa suit, of course. But Krampus actually has Germanic roots. And in the original lore, Krampus would scare kids on the naughty list on December 5th, but he would actually make the pilgrimage with Saint Nick to visit the children to make sure they were all behaving. So the good kids got prizes like dried fruit and nuts and, you know, chocolate, and the naughty kids would have to endure Krampus, who would whip them with birch rods or sticks, and in some cases he would steal, eat, or even drown the evil children. So whereas, admittedly, Krampus is pretty scary, he does not have roots in the demonic realm. Okay, Lucy asked, why do salt barriers work? And that is a very interesting question. For those of you who are wondering, what are you talking about salt barriers? Salt barriers are, in essence, spiritual walls that you put around your home using literal salt. And my feeling and my opinion as to why they work in warding off evil spirits is because of the intention put behind them. So it's a physical embodiment of the emotion that you're putting behind throwing down salt. If you're steadfast in your emotions in ridding your property of an evil spirit, and you're throwing down this salt after being so emotional and saying these emotional prayers, then the energy behind that is going to act as a barrier when the salt is thrown down. And that, in a nutshell, is why I believe that salt barriers work. I love this next question. Alyssa asks, who would I want to be haunted by? I may have answered this question before, but for those of you who know me, I think this is going to be a very easy answer. Marilyn Monroe. Marilyn could haunt me anytime she wants. And if there was some other top spirits to be haunted by, I guess I would say Jane Mansfield, Anna Nicole Smith. I'm sure some of you are detecting a theme here. My type is very easy to figure out. So those are a few, but of course, Marilyn Monroe, number one on the list. Again, I love this question. Frank asks, who is my favorite Ghostbuster and why? And I believe they're referring to strictly the fictional characters and not the actors portraying them. But I know Peter Venkman, played by Bill Murray, was the easy answer for most people to go to because he was funny. But I think I'm going to go with Ray Stantz as my favorite Ghostbuster. Of course, played by Dan Aykroyd, who also co-wrote Ghostbusters and has a deep, deep passion for the paranormal, dating back to his grandfather in Canada, who actually was a real ghost hunter and researcher and wrote paranormal literature. But the Ray character kind of reminds me of myself in terms of how I would behave during a ghost hunt, because I'm just enthusiastic. And by the way, excuse me if you hear some vibrations. I'm actually getting some text messages as I record this from some people who want to know a little something about ghost hunting. It's funny. This is very ironic. So I will have to get back to them later. But yeah, I'm going to go with Ray Stantz. And I, of course, love the scene in the original Ghostbusters when Ray has that dream about the female ghost. I mean, come on. It's a great scene. let's see. Oh, this is a good one. I like this one a lot. Kay asks what my opinion is of the top ghost shows, which of course are Ghost Adventures and Ghost Hunters and blah, blah, blah. I think some of them are purely, how do I put this, for entertainment. A lot of them, to be honest with you. I do find credibility in Ghost Adventures. Now, I'm not saying there's not theatrics involved, but I actually really enjoy Zach Bagans' approach. I enjoy the provocation, and I do find him entertaining. I have to just say, one of the major ghost shows, I can't really say the title, but I know for a fact, for a pure fact, because I've talked to somebody who was on one of those shows, there was made up stuff that they actually fabricated evidence on one of the major ghost shows. I'm not going to say the title, but I can tell you that there is a serious question of credibility when you get to these television shows, because people have to remember it is a television show at the end of the day, and they need to get results. Otherwise, people do not watch. Which is why I enjoy more documentaries more, because a documentary is a single expedition with no expectation, and documentaries just record what happens, as my sister and I did in The Witch of Hinsdale, where we went upstate and literally just recorded whatever happened to us, and what happened is what happened. And if we didn't get anything, guess what? We just would have had a bunch of footage with nothing on it. So that's it in a nutshell. Dan asks what my opinion is of divining rods. Well, of course, I'm a little biased because I have used divining rods and I fully endorse divining rods. And you don't see them in a lot of paranormal investigations. I think some people have discredited them, and I don't really know why, because I find them extremely powerful. I have gotten responses in question and answer sessions with spirit unit using divining rods. I have also gotten results during our documentary of the witch. I'm sorry if I'm stammering. I'm just like trying to get out all this information in a relatively short amount of time. But we did get results using divining rods in the documentary, The Witch of Hinsdale. So check that out if you want to see why I am a big proponent of divining rods. Okay, Jake asks if I have any haunted hotel recommendations. Of course, that's so easy. If you want something relatively inexpensive and you want I'll say as close to a guarantee of a paranormal experience as possible, then I will highly recommend to everyone go book the Farnsworth Inn in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. If you can, book the Sarah Black Room. Very haunted. I've had experiences every single time I've been to Gettysburg. So, if you want an experience, check out Gettysburg, especially the Farnsworth Inn. Erica asks, would I open the Dybbuk box? Now, of course, for those of you who are not familiar with the Dybbuk box, go back into the archives of this podcast, find the episode on the Dybbuk box, and you'll hear all about it. But the short answer to that question is hell no. I would not open the Dybbuk box, nor would I encourage anybody else to do so, even from a standpoint of paranormal research, because what is in that box and surrounds that box is pure demonic energy. So no, I would not open the Dybbuk box. Okay, here we go. Lana asks, great name by the way, what are essential pieces of equipment in paranormal investigation? And I can only answer this, of course, from my perspective. I am an old school guy. I do not use high-tech equipment. I literally use a very simple camera. I bring my cell phone as well, and I use the recorder on my cell phone most of the time. But you can use, of course, a digital voice recorder or even the old school tape recorders, which I love. And to me, that is the most powerful evidence you're going to capture. So I am not a high-tech person. And for extra safety, I would say essential pieces would be holy water. I use holy water in every single investigation. And I would also highly recommend the divining rods. As I mentioned earlier, I love working with the divining rods. It might take you a little bit of time to get comfortable with them, but again, I would highly recommend using them. Okay, Katie asks, are angels more powerful than demons? There's a very interesting question with a very easy answer, and the answer is 100% yes. Angels are always, in every single case, more powerful than demons. Which is why I don't get why certain people go the wrong path in life, because you're never going to go wrong when you are with the light. So definitely stay in the light, pray to the angels, not to the other beings, and you're going to be fine. But Saint Michael, very powerful angel. Saint Benedict, very powerful angel. I know investigators who have invoked these saints' names during investigations, and they were literally saved from demonic attacks. So, yes, angels are more powerful than demons. Tom asks, is there more spirit activity around holy days? Great question. And the answer is yes. anytime you have a holy day, you're going to have the opposite reaction on the other side. So anytime there's an extremely holy day like Easter or Christmas, the demonic activity is going to spike, and you will see a surge in paranormal cases that spring up around holy days. So, very interesting question. I really appreciated that one. Oh man, this is a great one. Ian asks if I believe in giants. And, you know, not in the traditional sense. We're not talking Jack and the Beanstalk giants, but there have been bones found all around the world in every continent that are larger than what we perceive as being tall. And I'm talking about like 9 feet tall skeletal bones in literally every continent around the world. I believe that there were people like the Norse Norwegian roots who are known to be very tall. I believe at one point in history there were people who were like 9 and 10 feet tall. I don't know if they were just, genetically, because of the circumstances, that tall, or if we're talking possibly some connection to the Anunnaki. For those of you who are not familiar with the Anunnaki, look them up, because I don't want to go into great detail. Otherwise, that will take an extra 20 minutes. And we're already going on 16 minutes at this point. I, again, love this next question because it's from a location which I am very passionate about. But Lisa asks my thoughts on the Amityville house. And, of course, I've talked about this in the past. My very first episode on this podcast was about the Amityville house. It is a location I've been to, and I can tell you that despite what you've read about hoaxes and whatnot, the energy there is very real. The activity that occurred there is very real. And when I went, and I went right up to the front and I touched the house, I can tell you that the two people that I was with did not want to go near that house. And they were definitely feeling vibes. And if you ask any reputable psychic to tap into the energy of that house, they're going to have an immediate visceral reaction. There is something there, I can tell you, and the Amityville house is real. That's capital IS. Aaron asks, and this is hilarious, and I love this question, would I sleep on the bed that they used in the movie The Exorcist, which we're talking about Reagan's bed? For those of you who are not aware, they were having all kinds of activity occur on that movie set. And I know from a friend of mine, Ralph Sarchi, who was offered to take that very bed into his home, that there is activity surrounding that bed. It's because, of course, they were using it in the story to talk about the very famous exorcism case. Based on Father Bowden's book and, or his diary, I should say, and strange things started happening around that bed. There was actual movement that they captured, with that bed. So would I sleep on that bed? Hell no, I would not sleep on that bed because there is definitely some activity connected with that bed. So in a nutshell, no, I wouldn't. Would I recommend anybody else sleep on that bed? Absolutely not. So I hope that answers the question, honestly. But yeah, that's my answer. Hell no, I would not sleep on that bed. This is great. I like this next question. I'm only going to answer two more questions because I literally had about 50 that I could have answered. And this would have been a 2-hour episode, and I don't want to bore the hell out of people. So I will not do that. Mike asked what my Christmas paranormal wish list is in terms of locations I want to visit. Again, I've answered this question on the podcast before. There are so many locations that I would love to visit. I mean, there is a laundry list, and there is really famous locations there are, I should say, very famous locations that I would, I'm not going to say die to visit, that's too corny, but there is one location not as well known that I am fascinated by, and that is the Ancient Ram Inn in the United Kingdom. It is probably the oldest known extremely haunted location, and that would be my number one Christmas list paranormal investigation site to go to, the Ancient Ram Inn in England. Again, for those of you not familiar, look up the Ram, and you'll see why I would love to visit there. And I have one last question, and this is extremely interesting, but I don't think I've ever been asked this as far as I know, so I thought this would make a great final question. Blaine asked me, what is more haunted, the East Coast or the West Coast? My nutshell answer is going to be the East Coast, and that is because it was the first to be inhabited in our, you know, in our nation. Obviously, we don't know the full history of our nation prior to us getting here, but we do know it was first colonized by a large group of people, you know, when it became the Americas, and they started on the East Coast. So naturally, you're going to have more energy, you're going to have more history on the East Coast. Now, that's not to say there is not a bevy of activity on the West Coast. Of course there is. But the East Coast, with the early history that it has, with, you know, from you know, my gosh, the first, you know, founding fathers, you know, of course, Philadelphia, Boston, Massachusetts. I mean, I can go on and on. Even down, of course, south when you get to Florida with St. Augustine, there's just more history of paranormal activity on the East Coast. So if you're a ghost hunter and you had to pick between the coasts, I'd say hit up the East Coast. It's also a little easier to travel on the East Coast. As we know, the West Coast is spread out, so you really have to travel to hit up those haunted locations. But that is my nutshell answer to that one. I'm really happy I was able to do this. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this. Merry Christmas to all of you. I am very excited for the final episode. I have a really cool interview lined up to close season 2 of this podcast. And of course, next week, I'm going to watch my favorite movie of all time, It's a Wonderful Life. And as the wonderful quote in It's a Wonderful Life went, it was, I didn't say that very eloquently, but I want to close this with a quote from It's a Wonderful Life. And I don't care if it's corny or not, but as Clarence wrote to George Bailey in the book, no man is a failure who has friends. So if your friends are among the living, or if your friends are among the spirit world, it doesn't matter. Just know that you're not a failure if people out there love you. And I love all of you for listening to this. For Footsteps in the Attic, this is Brian Hobson. We'll see you next week.